Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. We like to kick off the program with new music, and this week, I suppose you could say it's something that's both vintage and completely new, if that's possible. Back in the 70s, the Crayolas earned a reputation as the Tex-Mex Beatles, touring with the likes of Nick Lowe and Joan Jett. The Crayolas were a distinctive brand of post-punk power pop, owing as much to the British invasion, perhaps, as to the cultural heritage of their native San Antonio. Well, by the 1980s, it seemed the Crayolas were no more. But since their rebirth in 2008, the band's been busier than ever, and their new album, Tormenta, may be the ultimate reintroduction.
Hey, chiquitita, quiero ser tu novio. Sweet muñequita, quiero ser tu novio. Hey, chiquitita, quiero ser tu novio. Sweet muñequita, quiero ser tu novio.
The Crayolas reworking of a Ramones song, true to form. Co-founder Hector Saldana joins us from San Antonio. Hector, you've got two different versions of this song on the new album, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend. What's the thing there?
We recorded that song in English. It's actually a bilingual version. We love the Ramones song. It's actually a song that we've played since we were kids. We had never recorded it, so we made sort of a Crayolas version of it, the Ramones song. Then some friends of ours heard it, and our record company guys said, you got to do that in Spanish. So we went back and did it all in Spanish.
So was this the kind of music that you and your brother were listening to when you founded the Crayolas back in what would it have been, 75, 76, something like that?
Well, we started playing nightclubs in 75. We were, I guess, you know, some bands, we were a garage band before that, and I guess a bedroom band before that. And so we were playing at that time songs by The Who, The Raspberries, Badfinger. And where the Ramones come in is the story of this, and I may have shared this with you before, is that we played a radio show in San Antonio, a big one for us, on the Guadalupe River. And after the show, we were paid with not only our check, but also with a box full of records of the Ramones' first album. The DJ, I can still remember, handed it to us. He goes, these guys will never make it. You'll never play this. You can have this. He gave us literally a box full of albums of that Ramones first record. And I just stared at that picture. I said, what is this? Like, you know, I love the pictures. The name, I wasn't sure what it was. And I took it home and I just got into it.
You know, unlike, I suppose, Doug Somm, who was born in San Antonio but adopted Austin, the Crayolas have always sort of planted their flag in San Antonio. And I wonder if, in a way, you guys haven't sort of paid a price for that, since San Antonio's music scene has always been a bit eclipsed, at least in terms of the PR and the hype and everything, by Austin.
I would say it like this. I mean, Austin, obviously, the music capital of Texas. But if that's true, then San Antonio is the Liverpool, and we have a lot of great musicians, a lot of great young groups that are really exciting. And, you know, we're kind of proud to have any kind of connection to that. With us, you know, we're always the oldest guy in the room when we walk into it. But, you know, we're friends with, I think the young bands carry on that sound, and they're taking it out beyond the borders of Texas.
You have a lot of originals on this collection, and lots of remastered tracks from your past, like 12 Heads in a Bag. But one of the highlights, I have to admit, Hector, one of the highlights for me is this complete reimagining of an old corrido. What's the story behind Piedras Negras?
It's a song written in 1954 by Santiago Jimenez Sr. That's Flaco Jimenez's father. And he wrote the song in 1954 about a flood that took place that literally wiped out the city of Piedras Negras. Santiago Jimenez Sr. never learned to read. He never learned to write. He worked as a janitor. And Santiago told me the story that his father was mopping a school, listening to the radio and the news accounts of the death in Piedras Negras, and it was humming to himself as he mopped. We took the corrido, and I just turned it into a Crayola song, and it's one of my proudest moments ever, because Flaco Jimenez played on the track, and the song fades out to the sound of the original recording on a 78 RPM record provided by the Jimenez family.
Let's listen. This is Piedras Negras. It's one of the highlights on the new album Tormenta by the Crayolas.
En Piedras Negras, Coahuila, este desastre pasó. Quedó el pueblo destrozado, también mucha gente ahogada murió. El año 54, 3 de la tarde sería. Abandonando a sus casas, todita la gente a las bombas corrían. Los radios de San Antonio cada momento anunciaban que en Piedras Negras, Coahuila, los niños chiquitos de hambre lloraban. Toda la gente gritaba pidiendo auxilio y corrían. El agua del río Bravo a cada momento subía y subía. Muchos perdieron la vida, mucha gente se salvó. Luego desde San Antonio, con agua y comida, la gente ayudó. Radios de San Antonio cada momento anunciaban que en Piedras Negras, Coahuila, los niños chiquitos de hambre lloraban. Qué terrible, señores, daba mucha compasión de ver los niños chiquitos, hombres y mujeres, llorar del dolor. Los radios de San Antonio cada momento anunciaban que en Piedras Negras, Coahuila, los niños chiquitos de hambre lloraban. Ya con esta me despido, con dolor del corazón, que el pueblo de Piedras Negras quedó destrozado por la inundación. Coahuila, este desastre pasó.
There at the end, that's the original version of Piedras Negras, and of course the entire track is a reimagining of that song by the Crayolas. It's really a stunning track on a terrific album, Tormenta, which is set to come out on the 30th of July. Hector Saldana is one of the co-founders of the Crayolas. Thanks so much for taking time to speak with us. I really enjoy this new album.
Thank you, David, very much, and thank you, Austin.
Ask a musician about his or her musical inspiration, and one group you'll hear frequently cited is that quartet from Liverpool that made it so big in the 60s. It's no surprise that while Kevin Peroni was growing up in Corpus Christi, he too would be touched by the Beatles. In fact, as leader of the group Wiretree, which has a new album called Get Up, Kevin's music definitely has a Beatlesque quality to it. Concise power pop portraits with chiming harmonies that seldom clock past the 3.5 minute mark. But his biggest musical inspiration, perhaps, comes from a rather unexpected place.
I actually just had a cassette I found. It was on clearance. It was Chariots of Fire, and this is the most cheesiest thing in the world, but and it didn't exactly start there. My first record was Mamas and the Papas, you know, Monday, Monday. And I was like, Monday, Monday.
And great just, harmonies, too.
It was beautiful, and it's almost just like memories of things just come out of the woodwork and makes me try to do these things, but on a different level. This is just me from Corpus Christi trying to traded in my weight set for a keyboard, just trying to figure out how to do these things because I didn't have any lessons. I would just play it by ear. Like ever since I was a little kid, I'm not really the outgoing type. I would just sit in my room, play music, and that was my little safe place. Then it turned into where I actually got these instruments and started playing and making my own music, making music that I would want to hear, basically, and kind of learning how to do these things, trying to figure out how to do, you know, there's nothing better than like the 3-minute pop song to me. So started making my own little private tapes.
In fact, I think the first time I ever heard your music, your first album, which came out in 2007, it was pretty much a bedroom project.
Oh, yeah, definitely. 2007's Bold, and that was all bedroom recording on Pro Tools in a garage apartment. You know, I first had to survive by getting myself temp jobs and getting myself something that can give me a little stability underneath the, you know.
Pay the bills.
To pay the bills.
Yeah.
And then when I got home after work or on the weekends, instead of going out with friends that I didn't really have here in Austin since I moved here, you know, I just held myself up in a room and wrote songs. That was my therapy. And sometimes when you do things sincerely without having the stars in your eyes, sort of, it becomes more real and becomes maybe something that people can relate to.
You mentioned that Rachel, your wife, is your bass player. Mm-hmm. How much was music part of your courtship, part of getting together with Rachel?
Well, we actually met on this AustinMatchmaker.com thing.
You're kidding.
Way back. You know, I mean, we've been married 11 years. So
this would have been back when this sort of thing was really out there.
Yeah, it was just kind of, I didn't know what I was doing on that site. I just figured, hey, I'm in the computers. I know how to filter out someone I might get along with. So she found me, and I had a picture of me drinking milk out of a milk carton. And then she seemed to like that because everybody else was, I don't know, flexing their muscles or something. So we only courted for 6 months and then we got married.
Wow.
So we eloped to Scotland.
Was she playing bass before?
No. Yeah. I just said, you want to play some songs with me? Mm-hmm. She said, I don't want to play anything. And it's like, well, you could play something. It's not that hard. I had a bass, had a couple extra basses, and I'll show you how to play the song. And she started playing the song with me. I was like, wow, she actually has really good rhythm and has a good ear of knowing when she's doing something wrong and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's most important. And she wasn't playing all over the place like a lot of people do.
On the new album, is there a theme? Is there something that ties the songs together?
Well, I was thinking about that this morning. We're expecting to have a little one now.
Congratulations. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So
do you know if it's going to be a boy?
Yeah, it's a boy. That's going to be a boy. November, early November, it's due.
Very excited for you. Congratulations.
Thanks a lot. So if you look underneath the hood on this new album, it's almost like you're talking, like I'm talking to a kid, you know, get up. It might be tough, but you can get through it and you'll be all right kind of thing. You know, just real basic themes of that.
I'm thinking he's going to be getting you up for the first 4 or 5 years, and then you're going to be getting him up.
I know. I'm having dreams about that, yeah. Get up, I know you found a way. Head up, look through those clouds of gray. Matters to me in the end. My head is full of all kinds of sound. It's better when you come around. My love is waiting there for me. I hope to see what she can see. Days around my head, they start to spin. Matter in the end.
The band is Wiretree, fronted by songwriter Kevin Peroni. That's from the new album, Get Up. Coming up, the week's music news, a lost band gets its big moment, and lots more as Texas Music Matters continues. From Austin, this is Texas Music Matters.
I'm Gary Hartman with the Center for Texas Music History at Texas State University in San Marcos. This week in Texas Music History, we'll hear from a jazz player who helped pioneer the Texas tenor sound. On July 16, 2004, Illinois Jacquet gave his last public performance in New York City. Born in Louisiana in 1922 to a Sioux Indian mother and a black Creole father, Jacquet was still an infant when his family moved to Houston. As a teenager, he toured with Milt Larkin's orchestra, and by 1942, Jacquet was playing in Lionel Hampton's band. That same year, Illinois Jacquet recorded his groundbreaking saxophone solo in the popular song, Flying Home. Illinois Jacquet became known for his unique honking style of playing. Along with Herschel Evans, Arnett Cobb, and Buddy Tate, Jacquet helped create the so-called Texas tenor sound, which had a profound influence on such legendary horn players as Ornette Coleman and John Coltrane. This week in Texas music history is made possible in part with support from Humanities Texas. I'm Gary Hartman.
With the Week in Local Music News, I'm Peter Mongiello of the Austin American Statesman, and this is the Austin Music Source. Black Sabbath stops at Austin's Irwin Center next week as part of a national tour in support of their new album, 13. The album, which was produced by Rick Rubin, has earned the band its first number one spot on the Billboard 200 chart. Guitarist Tony Iommi said this week that the band approached a new album as a follow-up to their 1970 debut, and that Rubin helped them get back to a basic sound. Austin Music People announced this week that it would be holding a voter registration drive during its United We Jam Festival in August. The festival, which takes place at clubs on Red River and on the East Side, August 23rd and 24th, will feature performances from Austin-based musicians. The advocacy group will also host an event for volunteers wishing to help with the registration drive at City Hall, August 20th. Austin rock band Spoon is getting ready to record a new album, according to drummer Jim Eno. Eno has been posting photos of the band in rehearsals at his public hi-fi studio last week. Eno said this week that the new material was sounding wild and that the band starts recording in the fall. For these stories and more, visit Austin360.com. From the studios of Texas Music Matters, I'm Peter Mongiello of the Austin American Statesman.
This is Texas Music Matters. I'm David Brown. Have you ever had an experience where you're doing something very ordinary, say, just watching a sunset, and you're suddenly struck by the beauty of the moment so much that it almost moves you to tears?
I know this is going to sound ridiculous, or maybe not, but the first time I ever heard Big Star, that's what happened to me. It was like 30 years ago, but it doesn't seem that long ago, really.
Years ago, my heart was set to live. Oh, and I've been trying hard against unbelievable odds.
There wasn't anything special about the moment or the occasion. It wasn't even the lyrics. It was the music. It was just indescribably perfect. Stuck by, at my side is God. It's not like Big Star is some hidden treasure or cult band. Musicians cite them as hugely influential, and they've been written about by critics worldwide for years. And yet somehow, the band's extraordinary catalog has never become part of the mainstream. Big Star is far from a household name. But the story of the band is the stuff of music legend, and it's told in a new documentary called Nothing Can Hurt Me. Joining us from Big Star's hometown of Memphis is the last surviving original member of the band, drummer Jody Stevens. Jody, could you describe precisely where you are right now?
Sure, David. I'm in Studio A here at Ardent Studios in Memphis, Tennessee. And it's where all the Big Star records were mixed and much of them recorded.
Do you remember what it was like when you were recording that first record? I mean, could you tell there was something special going on?
I could, and so much so that it was the reward in itself. I you know, the record really, aside from rock writers, the record never really had an audience. But the way it sounded and you know, the songs that Alex and Chris and even Andy were writing, it was all just magic to me. And the way John Fry, our mentor and engineer, was, you know, getting it down on tape. Alex Chilton and Chris Bell were the primary writers. And Alex sang and lead and played guitar. Chris Bell sang lead and played guitar. And Andy played bass.
The film... early on, begins with a clip from an interview in the mid-70s with Alex Chilton at her home station, KUT, here right. In Austin.
Now we're going to talk about a band I used to play with that changed a lot of people's heads.
Before Big Star, Chilton had already been something of a star, right?
He had been. Alex had joined up what was to become the Box Tops, I think when he was 16, and maybe, I know their big hit, The Letter, was like the number one record in the country in 1967.
Someone told me.
I used to play with the Box Tops. I am the man who sang The Letter.
Give me a ticket for an aeroplane. Ain't got time to take a fast train. Lonely days are gone, I'm a-going home.
You know, I think the first song Alex stepped up to sing was a huge hit. And so we had to hear that bit of time with the Box Tops, and then he left the Box Tops and went to New York and then moved back and joined up with Chris, Andy, and me.
When you had come together as a band and you were recording those first sessions, you knew something was special, as you say, that you guys could make it big. Your music would be heard on the radio, that you'd have a big-selling album. And the name Big Star, of course, ultimately it's actually a lifted from a regional grocery chain?
It was. There was a grocery store across the street from Ardent Studios when it was over on National. Avenue here in Memphis, called Big Star. And I think Andy and Chris and maybe Alex were all outside the studio taking a break. And there was Big Star.
Ultimately, of course, I mean, a lot of irony in the fact that the band never did achieve the sort of commercial success. And the film, though, does suggest that in part, Big Star's fortunes were limited because of poor support from the parent label, Stax, which ultimately went bankrupt. Is that how you see it?
Well, what happened with Stax, I think Stax certainly had its heart in the right place. And Al Bell, who was pretty much running Stax at the time, had struck a pretty unique sort of deal with Columbia. But shortly after that was maybe, you know, seemingly before the ink was even dry, Clive left Columbia. And frequently what happens is when your champion leaves a record label, you're left without support at that label.
Try to understand what I'm going through. Don't blame me for what folks will do. For some of us it's not a good time. But you're gonna get used to and you'd better resign yourself. You get what you deserve.
You know, you look back at artists from, Matthew Sweet to Teenage Fan Club, R.E.M., The Flaming Lips, The Replacements, who are in this film. I mean, so many people cite Big Star as highly influential. What accounts for the fact, you think, that the band was so influential and yet commercial success was so elusive? I mean, Big Star didn't break through commercially, but tens of thousands of bands never do. The heartbreak here seems to be that so many people feel like Big Star was one of those bands that really deserved to emerge. I mean,
to some people, possibly, but for me, it's to quote Yogi Berra, I guess it ain't over till it's over, and there's so much going on now that's positive, and we seem to be getting a lot of attention now, and certainly the really sad part is that Chris and Andy and Alex aren't here to enjoy that.
I remember I was on the radio when doing some South by Southwest coverage when we heard that Alex had passed away, and Alex was in fact en route to Austin for a reunion show at South by Southwest.
It was shocking. And so unexpected. But the outpouring of affection and care for Alex at South by Southwest was tremendous. I mean, I kept hearing stories about bands playing Big Star songs or Alex Chilton solo songs. The band has been really a personal discovery for a lot of people. It really was a very organic, literally word of mouth kind of thing. And it just took, 17, 18 years to build an audience.
An amazing story. The documentary is called Nothing Can Hurt Me. Jody Stevens, a member of the original lineup, speaking with us from Memphis, Tennessee. Jody, congratulations on all you're doing these days, and congratulations on the documentary. It's a really powerful powerful story.
Thank you, David.
We've got an exclusive song that Big Star's Alex Chilton recorded live at KUT back in 1978, coming up later in the program. Also, Hayes Carl takes the controls and a performance from a recent South by Southwest success story. It's the Austin Music Experience when we return. From Texas Music Matters, it's the Austin Music Experience. Performances from the live music capital of the world. In just over a decade, Hayes Carl has already cemented himself as one of the really great Texas songwriters. As we'll hear a little bit later, Carl got his start thanks to the help of a friendly fan. Emily Gimbel, on the other hand, comes from Texas music royalty. Her grandfather, Johnny Gimbel, played fiddle with Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, among others, and Emily Gimbel continues the family tradition with the Warren Hood Band these days. She recently lent her piano and her voice to Hayes Carl in her own Studio 1A. Caught live at KUTX Austin, Hayes Carl and Emily Gimbel.
You were smoking on a cigarette, talking about the deficit, putting all them wild boys down. Like a drunken Mona Lisa or the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you were hanging off the edge of town. Well, I overheard Afghanistan is safer than a minivan, left me wondering what I should do. You're like a four-leaf clover, I just had to come on over. I've never seen a woman like you.
You were falling like the Alamo, drinking fast and talking slow, looking like it's time to go.
Well,
were you hitting on that stripper, 'cause you can't afford a tipper, or just afraid of being alone? You was openly frustrated, you said Dylan's overrated, while singing Tangled Up in. Seen a fella like you.
Ain't that the way we do? It's true, we fall for the first one. Oh, how come it always ends up the worst one?
Man, you're probably a Democrat.
Well, what the hell is wrong with that?
Got nothing if you're Taliban.
Oh, I see. Well, I bet you slept with half the South.
Don't you ever shut your mouth.
Girl, how much did you pay for that time?
Oh, and you paid for those boots.
Oh, now shouldn't you be purging?
Well, you're probably still a virgin.
I can't believe you're not on the view.
Yeah, let's get another round.
It's looking like we're trouble bound. I have never seen another like you. Ain't that the way we do? It's true, you take the breath. Seems like you are bound to be the death of me. Oh, well, a couple hours later, we were in the elevator. I'm making out like Bonnie and Clyde.
We were dizzy from a love without
throwing up
and going down.
Lord, it's been a hell of a ride. I'm having trouble breathing.
Well, I probably should be leaving.
You know I'm up in room 402.
Well, I got a hint to you. There's a chance I'm gonna screw
Whoa,
you.
Whoa, I've never seen another like you. I don't know if it's forever, but I'm glad that we're together. I have never seen another like you.
It's the Austin Music Experience. Hayes Carl with Emily Gimbel, caught live in our own Studio 1A. Like a lot of singer-songwriters, Carl started out at the bottom of the food chain, so to speak, but he received a helping hand from a familiar voice.
I first met Ray Wiley Hubbard in 1999, 2000, down in Galveston, Texas. I was tending bar at a little joint called the Old Quarter Acoustic Cafe, and Ray had a show, and I weaseled my way into opening for him, and then I got demoted. Some other guy met Ray at a funeral and asked if he could be the opener. And so I became the opener for the opener. But anyway, I met Ray very briefly, and he was very complimentary. And I remember I moved to Austin about a year later and was having a really rough time of it. I was sleeping on my buddy's couch. He was running an adult website out of his apartment. And I was selling vacuum cleaners door to door during the day, and then I waited tables at Red Lobster at night, and I was just getting nowhere. I was not getting any gigs or dates or anything. It was a sort of a dark period for me. And I remember I called up Ray Wiley because I was trying to piece together a press kit. I thought maybe that would help me get some gigs. And the problem was no one had ever said anything nice about me that I could include in a press kit. It was a quote from my mom was my press kit at that point. And that was just that I was an okay kid. And I called up Ray and I said, Ray, you probably don't remember me, but I opened for you a year back, and you said something very nice in passing, and would you mind if I used it in this press kit? And he said, absolutely. You can absolutely use it. And he said, do you have a place to stay? And I said, well, I do. It's not ideal, but I do have a place to stay. And but he offered his advice, wisdom, and opened up his home to me. And I'm fairly certain he may not have even remembered who I was, but that was just the kind of guy that Ray Wiley Hubbard is. That does not mean that you should go call him and ask if you can stay at his house. He'll be mad at me if he gets a flood of phone calls from broke songwriters. But anyway, this is Ray Wiley Hubbard performing a Woody Guthrie song, This Morning I'm Born Again.
This morning I was born again, and the light shines on my land. I no longer look for heaven in your deathly distant land. I do not want your pearly gates, don't want your streets of gold. This morning I was born again, and a light shines in my soul. This morning I was born again, I was born again complete. I stood above my troubles and I stand on my two feet. My hand, it feels unlimited. My body feels like the sky. I feel at home in the universe where yonder planets fly. This morning I was born again. My past is dead and gone. This great eternal moment is my great eternal dawn. Each drop of blood within me, each breath of life I breathe, is united with these mountains and the mountains with the seas. I feel the sun upon me, its rays crawl through my skin. I breathe the life of Jesus and old John Henry in. I give myself, my heart, my soul to give some friend a hand. This morning I was born again, I'm in the promised land.
This morning I was born again, and a light shines on my land. I'm no longer looking for heaven in your deathly distant land. I do not want your pearly gates, I want your streets of gold. And I do not want your mansion. For my heart is never cold.
Yeah!
Ray Wiley Hubbard covering Woody Guthrie's This Morning I'm Born Again, a song picked by Hayes Carl. He's taking over the keys to our home station on Saturday night. You can hear our guest DJ Hayes Carl at 6 p.m. Texas time on the 989. In 2008, the Los Angeles singer Michael Fitzpatrick figured out that he was sick of hearing the guitar in every song on the radio, so he specifically set out to make a band that didn't feature the instrument. And the result is Fitz and the Tantrums. Their electro-soul sound has taken the world by storm, critics calling their new album More Than Just a Dream infectious, and a packed audience in our own Studio 1A couldn't agree more. Fitz and the Tantrums caught live at KUTX Austin. Lead singer Michael Fitzpatrick spoke with KUTX's Kevin Connor about his special connection to the live music capital.
We came to that first South By with a hope and a prayer. We were on every short list to band to go see and stuff. And we were at the point where we needed somebody to come in and partner up and support us. And, you know, we played a big showcase, and there was all the record executives, and we saw them halfway through the set leave one by one, and my heart's just sinking. You know, and then the last show of the last day, we played over at Mellow Johnny's for Danger Bird Records, and we were the only band to play on that showcase that wasn't signed to that label. And after we finished the show, all 500 people in the audience, all they did to when they talked to the owner of the label was talk about us. And I think he kind of got it. Wow, they're talking about this band and they're not on my label. And he's actually in our neighborhood where we live in LA, and he invited us to come be a partner with him, and then began our road, you know.
Six AM by Fits and the Tantrums, live in our own studio 1A. We'll close the show with another live performance, one that's been gathering dust in our archives for close to 30 years. Now, earlier in the program, we heard Big Star's Alex Chilton being interviewed on KUT back in 1978. Well, in that same broadcast, he brought out his guitar for a song that you're likely to hear in a few Texas honky-tonks, although probably not played this way.
The night before I came to this town, I'd been looking for this song for 3 years, and now I found it. This one is called Waltz Across. All right. Texas. When you dance with me, with those stars in your eyes, it's a fairyland tale that's come true. And when you look at me, with all those other guys, I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook end, and I'm lost in your charms. I could waltz across Texas with you.
Texas Music Matters is a production of KUTX in Austin. Our senior producer this week is Art Levy. And on behalf of the entire Texas Music Matters team, I'm David Brown, wishing you all the very best from Austin, Texas.
My worries and troubles, they're all up and gone. I don't know what I'm gonna do, but when you look at me with those stars in your eyes, honey, I could waltz across Texas all the way to El Paso. Waltz across Texas with you in my arms. Waltz across Texas with you. Like a storybook end, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across Texas
with you.
With you know who.
You know who.